This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We know that President-elect Donald Trump has a very different opinion about climate change than President Barack Obama. Obama led a global effort to reduce greenhouse gases. But here's what Trump said about that to Fox News' Bill O'Reilly.
Warming, climate change, do you think the world's going to change for the worse because it's getting warmer?
I think that there'll be little change here. It'll go up. It'll get a little cooler. It'll get a little warmer like it always has for millions of years. It'll get cooler. It'll get warmer. It's called weather.
Some people have said that Trump didn't mean all of the things that he said while on the campaign trail, but we're seeing different policies coming from Donald Trump in some areas. But this is his selection for the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt.
I mean, the EPA, when they introduce these rules, they're not contemplating the increased cost to consumers across the country. You know this, but when you look at fossil fuels, oil, natural gas, and coal, it generates approximately 70% of all of our electricity. If you have this war on coal that the EPA is engaged in, and you take about 30 to 35% of that fossil fuel mix off the grid, what is that going to do? It's going to cause rates to skyrocket across the country.
And that was Pruitt speaking to Fox Business News. Pruitt is the attorney general for Oklahoma, a self-described, quote, leading advocate against the EPA's activist agenda. He has repeatedly sued the EPA and worked directly in direct cooperation with the fossil fuel companies. He has questioned the scientific consensus of global warming, saying that the science debate is far from settled. So what does all of this mean for the nation and the world when it looks like the United States will no longer be leading the effort to deal with climate change, and in fact, going into the future, the nation may be working against finding solutions to reduce global warming? We're joined by Luke Metzger. He's the founding director of Environment Texas, which advocates for a cleaner environment, and Jay Lair. He's a science director at the Heartland Institute, which promotes market-based approaches to environmental protection. And also, we're joined in the studio by Marina Suarez. She is the assistant professor of geology at the University of Texas at San Antonio. And our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you what you think about climate change and whether or not the future administration is on an approach that you agree with. Give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet us at @tprsource, and welcome all three guests. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Luke Metzger, let me ask you first off, buddy, what do you think about our new possible appointee to the EPA, Mr. Pruitt?
We're very alarmed by his nomination. As you said, he's a noted climate denier, and suing the EPA has worked vigorously to stop some life-saving clean air measures that the EPA has proposed. Did nothing to stop the rash of earthquakes linked to fracking, wastewater injection in Oklahoma, and has proposed to undo much of the environmental progress we've seen not only in the last 8 years, but potentially beyond. Some of the cornerstone protections for clean air, clean water, and for our climate. And so we're very alarmed by this. President-elect Trump has sent mixed signals when it comes to his intentions around climate change and the environment, but his nomination of Attorney General Pruitt leaves no ambiguity that we're headed towards an EPA that is going to take significant action to weaken basic safeguards to keep our air clean, keep our water clean, and protect our land. So we're very concerned by the nomination.
Jay Lair over at the Heartland Institute, what direction do you see the Trump administration going in, and how do you feel about that?
Well, I want to totally disagree with the comments that we're going toward less clean air, or water, or soil, or land. I would say we're going toward cleaner water, soil, and land. We have the best environment on this planet. I was maybe the loudest voice from 1968 to 1971 working to convince President Nixon to form the Environmental Protection Agency. I succeeded with a number of other people. I helped to write 7 pieces of legislation working on blue ribbon panels for EPA in the 70s to create a safety net for our environment, and we indeed succeeded. In the last few decades, all new legislation coming out of EPA has been an overreach that has had no positive impact on the environment whatsoever. It's just cost us jobs and impeded our economy. As to global warming, we have not changed temperature in 18 years. There's no scientific evidence to support it. There are 100 mathematical models that the government supports that don't agree with each other. None of them ever predicted that we've been in a stable temperature for 18 years. None of them can predict backwards. The global warming is the biggest hoax ever perpetrated on society. It's cost the world collectively well over $1 trillion thinking they can control nature. I'm sure everyone will recognize that I'm right about what I'm saying, because certainly within two decades, it's fairly certain that we'll be going into a cooling phase. We're in about the 26th or 27th 11-year cycle of the sun, and the sun has been more dormant the last 30 years than any time in our living history, and I think we're moving toward a cold period. We'll manage it. We would manage warming. We would manage cooling.
Right.
To try to control nature, it's absurd.
Okay, well, thank you. There's a lot there. We're going to try to deal with many of the assertions that you made, but let's move on to our third guest, Marina Suarez, over at UTSA. Just before we get into everything, all the interesting things that we heard from Mr. Lehr, just tell me about what your reaction is to what you know about where we're headed with the Trump administration and global warming.
Well, as far as the Trump administration, I think there's a lot of different comments that he makes, so kind of figuring out exactly what he thinks is a little confusing.
He jumps around, but he has been on the record saying that he did think it was a hoax perpetrated
right.
by the Chinese.
Well, no, that's not correct, I don't think.
That he didn't say that?
No, that the fact that climate changes is a hoax, the fact that climate changes is just a fact that climate changes. I study paleoclimate, and we study changes in temperature all of the time at many different scales, the decadal scale, the 100-year scale, 1,000-year scale, and even longer than that. And greenhouse gases have risen well above the record that we have as far as in the last, say, 800,000 years. So when we've seen that in the past, in the paleoclimate record, temperatures have been much higher than they have been in the more recent geological
past. So is that like when the dinosaurs were around?
When the dinosaurs were around, and even sooner than that, the two major area time slices that a lot of paleoclimatologists study are the Cretaceous period, which is it's the period that I study, and then also an instance in about 50 million years ago, 55 million years ago, the Paleocene, Eocene thermal maximum. And those are times when we know that temperature was potentially as high as 8 degrees Celsius greater.
So looking at the historic record, the geologic record, which is long time spans, we're able to see that when there is a lot of carbon and methane in the air, that we do see higher temperatures, much higher than we have now. And that could be very disruptive to Western civilization in general. It could be catastrophic, as we hear. We're going to continue our topic. We're talking about climate change and how we're going to deal with it into the future under the Trump administration. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're looking at the future administration of the Trump as he becomes president. Today, the Electoral College is meeting, and looks like that's going to seal the deal on that. And so as Donald Trump becomes the president and he makes appointments, we're seeing, Rick Perry will be probably the head of the Energy Department. And we know that he is a good friend of the petroleum industry. And also we see that there is President-elect Trump is looking at Rex Tillerson, the chief executive for ExxonMobil, to be his Secretary of State, also a good friend. He's not just a friend, he is the petroleum industry. And looking at Scott Pruitt, he's going to be the head of the EPA, and he has said that he is a person who is an antagonist of the EPA. So what does that mean for trying to deal with climate change going into the future? The number to call in if you got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980. And Dell is on the line. And Dell, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I've got a short comment.
Okay.
Anyone that denies there's global warming is an irresponsible moron, is my comment. That includes Trump.
I appreciate you telling us that. So, Jay Lehr, you're over at the Heartland Institute. I guess we'll just toss that to you. You know, how is it that you're able to make a reasonable, scientific-based argument saying that climate change is a hoax?
Well, because there is no scientific evidence, and I'd like to challenge the paleoclimate comment somewhat that we just before the break.
So, Jay, before you begin your gallop, let me just go to that one issue. So there is no scientific information, no data that will lead anyone to believe that there is climate change.
There are only mathematical models. The government and the UN support over 100 different models that are mathematical constructs trying to put in the variables that appear to have an impact on climate. We know that none of the models agree. We know that none predicted the stability of the Earth's temperature the last 18 years. We know that none have been able to predict backwards when we had the data, say what the Earth's temperature was 10 or 20 years ago. We just don't have any information. The idea that more ice is melting or there are more tornadoes or more droughts does not hold up on inspection. There are many claims. None of them actually are valid.
None of them are valid. So when you say things like that, I really need to give you a little pushback because those are really big blanket statements. So there is no sea level rise, right?
There is no sea level rise. Sea level varies all over the globe, but you're exactly correct. The sea level has been rising about 7 inches a century for the last 800 years, and there has no significant change in the sea level trend.
All right. So let me talk about the Heartland Institute a little bit. So the Heartland Institute was first really became known as a leader in saying that tobacco did not cause cancer, right?
Gee, I thought we were talking about climate change.
Well, we're talking about the Heartland Institute also because we like to know a little bit more about our guests sometimes. So y'all were leading the fight against cigarettes and cancer, right?
I would say that is not true whatsoever. And that we are a free market think tank that gathers data and provides.
I think it's pretty well established that the Heartland Institute worked with the tobacco Philip Morris company to question the health risk of secondhand smoke and lobbied against smoking bans, right?
No, that's absolutely incorrect. We have never lobbied. We don't lobby at all. We're a 201c3. We do no lobbying and no legislative work whatsoever. We are simply an organization that provides scientific information to elected officials so that they can decide on their own what are the right things to do on behalf of the citizens they represent.
Okay. All right, then. Let's bring in Luke Metzger into this conversation. And so when they say there's no evidence that there's climate change over at the Heartland Institute, what do you think about that, Luke?
That's hogwash. There are mountains of thousands of scientific studies. You look at the leading scientific organizations in the United States and around the world, the American Geophysical Union, NASA, here in Texas, the entire Atmospheric Sciences Department at Texas A&M. There is, you know, virtual unanimity. You know, more than 97% of climate scientists agree that the Earth is warming and that humans are large contributors to that warming. And there are many, many data points to back that up, including rising sea levels and including a warming planet. This past year was the hottest year on record. This one is shaping up to be the same, if not hotter. And then we're seeing, you know, many demonstrable, impacts here in Texas. You know, San Antonio and Central Texas is flash flood alley, but that's gotten even worse, where we've seen, extreme rainstorm events, leading to even worse flooding events, costing people their lives, causing millions of dollars in damage. And then that is, you know, on the other hand, we're also seeing long periods of drought that's consistent with climate scientists' predictions. And unfortunately, that's just what we're already experiencing. Okay. And some of the predictions of the future are even more frightening.
Well, okay, so Luke, you disagree with what Jay Lehr of the Heartland Institute says. And so let me bring in Marina Suarez, over a geologist over at University of Texas at San Antonio. Is there no evidence that there is climate change?
No, there's lots of evidence. We don't even have to look at temperature. If you didn't want to look at temperature, you could look at things like the retreat of mountain glaciers. There actually was a study just very recently, I think in the last month or so, in which some scientists from, I believe, the University of Washington looked at mountain glaciers across different continents to try to determine how much of the retreat could be attributed just to, say, weather events and kind of just more recent, seasonal type of variation, and how much would be attributed
to. So you're saying that there is quite a significant amount of scientific evidence.
I would say that would be incorrect to say that there's no scientific consensus.
What about the fact that the Jay is telling us there's going to be global cooling starting in 20 years?
Well, I think based off orbital patterns, we would be considered in a cooler time period. But because greenhouse gases have increased quite significant, we probably will not go into that cooling period without an increase in CO2 and methane in the atmosphere. We would typically go into a cooler period. The climate varies on a lot of different scales and at a lot of different rates, and time scales and rates matter, and because the increase of greenhouse gases have probably kind of negated the orbital variation that we would see that would reduce the amount of solar radiation on the planet.
Okay, I'm going to take a caller with Billy. Sure. And Billy, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for letting me on. I believe in climate change, but I think that we focus on carbon emissions a little bit heavy. We're paving the world. There are cyclic things that go through our galaxies. There's solar flares. There's other things. There's inverted Faraday cages, they call HARP, where they oscillate the ionosphere and try and control rain. And we're also going through this year through the El Nino, which is affected here in San Antonio a lot, I feel.
Okay.
I've watched the weather for 61 years, so drive-thrus for hamburgers. That's my last word. Could y'all please talk about the other things that are contributing?
Okay. All right, Billy. Thank you so much for calling. So, Jay, it seems like Billy is saying that things are really, really complex, and just pointing towards carbon emissions is too simplified.
He's absolutely correct. There really isn't a planet, a computer on the planet that can handle all the variables that actually impact climate. It is very complex, and the models just grab off a few dozen of the variables that we think we have a handle on. But I have never said, and no one says, the climate is not changing. What I've said is the Earth is not warming as a result of increased CO2 emissions. And I'd like to throw out just two very simple technical aspects that Ms. Suarez might be able to handle. Number one, we have 900,000 years of fairly good ice core records from the Arctic, the Antarctic, and Greenland, and we see 1,500-year swings in the Earth's temperature. And we find that the temperature increases before carbon dioxide increases, and it usually leads by a few centuries. Now, this makes sense because the oceans hold most of our carbon, and they hold far more carbon dioxide when they're cold than when they're warm. So when the Earth warms, then later the oceans cool and they give up their carbon dioxide, much like if you're drinking a carbonated beverage, you open the can and it's all nice and bubbly and cool. If you leave it on a table, come back 30 minutes later, the fluid has warmed and the carbon dioxide comes out. That's one fact. The second one is that the carbon dioxide only absorbs a certain wavelength of the heat that comes back from the Earth. And for the most part, the carbon that's in the atmosphere now, carbon dioxide at 400 parts per million, has already absorbed that amount of wavelength radiation. We can double the carbon dioxide and we're not going to see much of a change. So that the role that carbon dioxide plays in the Earth's temperature is incredibly small.
Okay, I'm going to get her reaction. Jay, I got to get her reaction since you directed the question towards our guest. So what do you think?
Sure. So part of the problem is that CO2 can act as a feedback. So the variations that Mr. Lehrer is talking about are the orbital variations, so like the tilt, the eccentricity of the planet's orbit, and the wobble, and that affects the amount of incoming solar radiation, right? And so when you get an increase in solar radiation, one of the things that can happen is that, say, you get stronger monsoon seasons and that kind of thing, and that can cause an increase in greenhouse gases because you have more wetlands, increased amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. So it acts as a feedback, and so
we get into a spiral.
Yeah, right. And so there's a number of different feedbacks that kind of act to exacerbate the an increase in temperature. And then
so there's a lot going on. More than we can explain in the next 30 seconds.
I teach a whole class on it, actually.
Okay, so Luke Metzger, really quickly, as a director of Environment Texas, what can be done? How do you feel about where we're headed?
Well, I'm very concerned. I mean, I think what needs to be done is we need to make sure we stop any attacks on some of the steps that we've taken to fight climate change, including the Clean Power Plan, which were the first ever limits on carbon emissions from power plants. We need to defend those emissions. We also then at the local level and state level, we need to take action to...
Well, what about like organizations like you and private citizens, only got 20 seconds here, are able to file lawsuits to try to get the EPA to do its job? Do you see you taking on that kind of role?
Well, I'm sure the environmental community, we're definitely all looking at that. If there are attempts by the Trump administration to weaken or roll back some of these protections,
right,
there likely will be litigation. So
okay.
I think there is hope in the courts as well as other
places. I got to let you go. Luke Metzger over Environment Texas, Jay Lehrer at the Heartland Institute, and Marina Suarez, UTSA. This is The Source. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our discussion about the future of dealing with climate change under a President Donald Trump administration. So now we're going to look at how cities may have to lead the fight for a cleaner environment or limiting carbon emissions if the federal government and the state of Texas are not willing to take on that role. We're joined by Doug Melnick, the Chief of Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio's Office of Sustainability. And Jeff Coyle is with us on the line. He's the director of the City of San Antonio's Government and Public Affairs Department. And our phone lines are still open if you want to give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And also with us still is Marina Suarez, Assistant Professor of Geology at the University of Texas at San Antonio. And she has studied climate change in the long time form, going back to the time of the dinosaurs. 210-614-8980. Before the dinosaurs, I'm being corrected by her stern look.
Oh, no. Dinosaurs, yeah. Cretaceous period.
All right, okay. And so let me start off with Doug Melnick, Chief Sustainability Officer at San Antonio. So what can a city do? If the government, does federal government, state government says we're not into climate change, what can a city do?
I think what we have seen over the years are that cities nationally and globally are the ones taking action. I think there's plenty in our wheelhouse that we could start to influence. And a lot of it really isn't necessarily about carbon. It's about livability, quality of life, health outcomes. And so I think what we're seeing now is that, again, cities will need to basically keep the work going. And actually 2 weeks ago when Jeff and I presented to City Council on air quality and non-attainments and what the change in the federal administration means to our actions, the consensus was, well, we need to move forward because it's not a political issue. It's about the health of our community and our economic vitality.
So Scott Pruitt, who is the Trump appointee to head the EPA when he was he still is the Attorney General for Oklahoma, he sued the EPA over attainment. And so it's seen that he may try to sort of scale back whether or not that is still going to be an issue. I don't know what he can do under the law, but he's not going to be an aggressive enforcer. And so some people may say, hey, celebrate San Antonio because we won't have to deal with being out of attainment. But that could mean that our air could become more, foul.
Right. And our air quality has been improving. Our ozone levels have continually come down. But I think councils recommendation was we don't know what's going to happen right away, but the fact is air quality is never going to cease to be an issue. And so it's a priority to keep moving forward with.
Yeah, high ozone levels and dirty air, that means asthma rates. It's hard on the elderly who have respiratory issues. Also means lower birth weights and higher infant mortality.
And even if non-attainment designation doesn't come this October, as is scheduled, it could come 4 years from now. And so we just want to make sure that the continued positive trend in our air quality continues.
Okay, so Jeff Coyle, director of the City of San Antonio's Government and Public Affairs Department, you're looking at what could be coming out of the next legislative session?
That's right. The Texas legislature convenes shortly after the first of the year, January 10th. And there's a number of issues that we are regularly up there advocating for or against that benefit the environment. We're not up there so much having a debate about climate change, but more things that are within, as Doug put it, our wheelhouse. So our regulation of tree protection and tree removal in the community, our ability to grow our boundaries as a city to take in some of these fast-growing areas and be able to manage the growth that's coming to our community. And so they're not issues that are very front and center for the public, but they affect their lives on an everyday basis, whether they realize it or not. And so we're gearing up for that again.
So you mentioned trees off the bat, and so we've had this over the past couple of legislative sessions where there have been other lawmakers not connected to San Antonio who have put forth bills that would basically outlaw San Antonio's tree ordinance into the ETA, and that developers don't like. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. There are some 50 or 60 cities across Texas that have different tree ordinances. Every local elected city council in those cities has come up with the solution that they think is right for their community. In our community, what we've decided is, we don't tell you that you can or can't cut a tree down in your own backyard, but we do say if you're going to subdivide a large property for development, for a residential subdivision, for a strip mall, something like that, you need to protect a certain percentage of the tree canopy and or mitigate the loss of trees. And it's an air quality issue, it's an aesthetics issue, it's a military protection issue. And you're right, there are some who don't like that. And more often than not, it is a legislator from somewhere else in the state who doesn't understand our ordinance and is convinced that we are somehow telling people what they can and can't do on their own property. And we spend the bulk of the legislative session educating people. And ultimately, so far, we've been able to be successful in defeating that because we think our ordinance here is very reasonable and has had a tremendously positive impact on our community as a whole.
Let's go to the phone lines with some callers. Number is 210-614-8980, and Mary is on the line. Mary, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I would like to make a generic comment on all the things that you have been discussing. I'm a retired teacher, a retired science teacher, and I feel that the people that are saying science facts, science data, it's all a hoax, are hurting our education in this country, because why would my students in a class want to believe anything that the scientists have proven for years? That's my comment. So the people that are saying it's a hoax, climate exchange, that the things where we see on the internet that the polar cap has shrunk completely, that we've got pollution in the air from CO2, and it's proven that it's bad, it's proven that it's there. Why would our students believe science when people keep saying it isn't true, like the future president?
Okay, thank you for the call, Mary. And so, Marina, what do you think?
I guess I couldn't agree. My mom was also an educator, so thank you for being a science teacher. I think that's something that I know myself, many of my friends and colleagues in the scientific community have, I guess, been, I don't know the best word, shocked and kind of appalled at is kind of the tendency for give complete falsehoods.
I mean, science is science.
Right. I mean, we have data, and
when it hit 32 degrees, what did it happen outside?
Right.
It froze. Okay, that was not an opinion. Things happen. And
yeah,
so.
And so just the outright kind of disregard for you know, scientific fact has been pretty concerning to, I think, a lot of people in the science community.
And so when some people on the political side of the argument try to discredit scientists, you know, I think it's fair to look at some of these organizations that are doing that discrediting and looking at their backing. And you see things like the Heartland Institute that we had on earlier and how much money they have received from the oil industry, which is a lot. And you say that has got to be part of the conversation, as well as looking at their track record as of denying other things as well in the past. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back, continue this conversation. We got a lot of calls here as well. We're talking about now the city of San Antonio and what it's doing to keep our environment clean as we go into the future of a Trump administration. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about climate change. What happens when those who don't believe that climate change is real become in charge of the federal government and the state government? And what can we do about that here locally in San Antonio? We're joined by Doug Melnick, the Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio's Office of Sustainability. San Antonio is in a unique position because the city has control of its electric plant. You know, it's a municipally owned CPS here. Also, Jeff Coyle is here, and he's director of the City of San Antonio's Government and Public Affairs Department. And let's get a caller in on the conversation with Bennett. And Bennett, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, hello. You folks in the discussion, no party has ever said what the percentage of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is. And I'll say it. It's 0.0004 as a constituent of the Earth, the atmosphere's chemicals. Second, in the last 100 years, carbon dioxide has gone from 0.0003 to 0.0004. This minuscule portion of the Earth's atmosphere by a bunch of supposed scientists saying that blocks all the Earth's heat from leaving the Earth's surface.
All right, Bennett, so thank you for the call, and I appreciate that scientific opinion. And from our real scientist, Marina Suarez.
Yeah, sure. No, that's right. We measure CO2 in parts per million. So right now it's at about 400 parts per million. And actually, one of the things that some people don't realize is that without greenhouse gases, our planet would be frozen. So in one sense, it's good that we have greenhouse gases in the atmosphere because it keeps the planet livable. The trouble is when it gets to very high concentrations, higher than we have seen in the most recent geologic past, that will do things to our climate system. Part of the problem is that our species evolved during a time which we would consider an ice house. So there was ice on both, you know, the North Pole and the South Pole. Now, we've had times in the geologic past when there was no ice on either pole.
But
that was not when our ecosystems that we know of today evolved. And so when we can see these times in the geologic past when we've had an increase in greenhouse gases. And people have actually done this where they go and, like, try to figure out the rate of increase of, say, CO2 in the atmosphere during these warm periods. And one of the things that concerns a lot of scientists is that the rate that we've calculated so far, it vastly exceeds those periods of super greenhouses.
Okay, so we're going to get back to the city of San Antonio,
sure,
what they're doing in just one second. But I just want to make one quick point, because I hear this all the time from people who are very skeptical of whether or not we're having a period of global warming and if people are responsible for it. So when we look at the history of the planet, and we talk about the length of time where there's been Western civilization, or since the Industrial Revolution, we've started pumping vast amounts of carbon into the atmosphere, it is less than 1% of the entire length of the entire planet. And it's very, very, very tiny.
Yes. Yeah.
And so when they bring up these global time type arguments, like, you know, then that's really not even germane to what we're talking about.
The rate of...
Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, saying, you know, there was, you go back 100 million years ago, yeah, but there, you know, we didn't have factories back then. We didn't have people.
Well,
we didn't have culture.
There,
we didn't have agriculture.
Yeah, there was a lot of other, there's a lot of ways that carbon can fluctuate in the atmosphere.
Okay.
And yeah, the more recent time is
all right.
Increases is
so,
a bit concerning.
Back to Doug Melnick, over the Chief of Sustainability Officer at San Antonio. So when the city has control of the CPS power utility, what can the city do?
Well, I think a lot. You know, and I think that's one of the unique opportunities that we have compared to most cities that have investor-owned utilities. CPS has already implemented tremendous programs in terms of incentivizing energy efficiency in businesses and residents, deployed a tremendous amount of renewable energy. And I think if we continually move down that road, it's only going to help reduce our contribution to greenhouse gases. I think coming up in the next couple of years, the retiring Dealey coal powered plant is going to be a huge reduction in our emissions. And so, you know, I think that coupled with other programs can really help build our community's resilience to whatever we can expect coming down the road in
right.
terms of climate change. But, you know, I think it's a key component of what we really need to do is education and have this conversation and the
sure.
dialogue continue.
So I've been looking at Scott Pruitt, the President-elect Trump's nominee to head the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And, you know, and his point of view is about jobs and about keeping energy cheap and making sure that everyone can afford power. And he doesn't want to increase the cost of people's electricity so that people are forced to conserve and have to do without. And so his point of view is that by having fossil fuel, we're able to have cheap power.
Right.
Now, San Antonio CPS is in a position to show that we can still have cheap power and also be heavily dependent upon renewables?
Yes, I mean I think when you look at our fuel mix, it's clean. I mean I think there's still work to be done, but I think the point I would make is if we start talking about jobs, the market's changing. I think the number of solar jobs, wind jobs, energy efficiency jobs, locally, statewide, and nationally is exploding. And so I think the argument that the only good jobs out there are related to the fossil fuel industry, you know, needs to be evaluated. I think the green economy is very strong, and it will not only employ our residents and folks, but it's going to improve our environmental health.
So Jeff Coyle, we're the government and public affairs official over at the City of San Antonio. Now, we've seen other states try to pass legislation that would be hostile towards the development of renewable energies. If that were to come up in Austin, would you sick your team on trying to, you know, shine a brighter light on renewables?
Well, we would always support CPS Energy and our ability to have a locally owned municipal utility that, as you've pointed out and Doug has explained, is able to really do things at the local level. There have already been bills filed in the pre-filing before the legislative session that have to do with what state lawmakers view as federal overreach and the state's ability to push back on that. I don't know that we will engage specifically on that issue as a city government, but what we say is actually a very similar message, which is we want to, at the local level, have elected city council, the level of government closest to the people that you're most likely to bump into at the grocery store, to be able to pass the ordinances that make the most sense for their community. And there's irony in the fact that the states are fighting the federal government while at the same time some legislators anyway are wanting to tell cities, no, you can't do those sorts of ordinances, we don't like that. So our position is very much one of local control. As Doug said, cities across the country are where a lot of the action is on some of these major issues, and we want to continue to have our local officials that you put in office be able to make the best decisions for our community.
Okay, another caller. Haley is on the line. Haley, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for a wonderful educational program, Mr. Davis. As a 12th-generation Jesuit-educated Texan, I want to bring up the fact of just stewardship that public officials are sworn to promote the common good, the common weal. And I don't see how these developers can say that they have the common good at hand when they're talking about air quality. I wish that it would be put in terms of whether we can breathe or not, not just of, you know, the air quality praise. And secondly, I really do resent the fact that, the empirical evidence being that, look at the Chinese population, they have been forced to wear oxygen masks, or at least masks to protect their breathing and their eyes when they go out in the many of the polluted cities because of the avarice of people just, you know, promoting the idea of consumerism and using up so much. But so what is all economic progress if we can't breathe the air or drink the water?
All right, Haley, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. But so let me ask you, Doug Melnick, about jobs. Okay, people are concerned about jobs, and that was always the big argument about these regulations from the EPA, that they're job-killing regulations. Is San Antonio hurting or helping its job future by switching towards renewable, being aggressive towards renewable energy?
I think what I would say to that is having a diverse portfolio of energy sources would only help the job situation. I think limiting anything at this point would be a negative. I think we see a growing solar market that's aided San Antonio, and I think it's something that we should continue. I would also, you know, really point out that, you know, again, the reason why we are addressing environmental issues, or if we're looking at carbon reductions, it's not about carbon. It's about our quality of life. It's about our children's health, our grandchildren's health, and it's about our economic competitiveness. And again, if we don't look at this, this is something that's being looked at by insurers, by bonding agencies, and by industry and corporations across the country and internationally. And if it's not something we're taking seriously and prepared to address, then it could hurt us going forward.
And you are hearing from the San Antonio City Council in a loud, clear voice that they support what you're talking about.
They, in a briefing on air quality and non-attainment, the strong consensus was we need to move forward. We will be briefing council in spring related to climate and where do we go. And I think we look forward to a robust community discussion.
And this puts San Antonio in a leadership position going forward for other folks to follow suit.
Yes, sir.
All right. I want to thank you so much, Doug Melnick, Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio Office of Sustainability. Jeff Coyle on the line, the Director of the City of San Antonio's Government and Public Affairs Department. He's going to be busy as the legislature begins in January. And Marina Suarez, Assistant Professor of Geology at UTSA. Thank you so much. This is The Source.